Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. Usually during our second hour, but today it'll be our first because this is IQ Friday, we engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Over these past days, we have been focused upon the story of creation as it is presented in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, particularly the initial creation account that you find in Genesis, which actually means, as actually Bereshith in Hebrew, in the beginning. And we have been doing so to demonstrate three things. One is that the creation account as presented by God is accurate from a chronological point of view. It is accurate from the perspective of the length of time that it took to create the universe, and that it is accurate as it relates to its content, where it describes what occurred on each day. Every place the science has been able to verify what has happened, it is in lockstep with what Yahweh revealed well over 2,500 years ago. We're also looking at this creation account because God told us three stories in one. Another story that is important for us to understand is the story of future human history. God laid out in each one of those 7 days the seminal events that would occur over the 6,000 to 7,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawa walked out of the garden to the time that those of us who survive to Yah's return have the opportunity to walk back in. It is a 6,000-year story, with a 7,000-year being a celebration of us being in the garden with Him. And so trying to identify the markers at 1,000 years, and particularly at 40 Yobel, which would be 2,000 years throughout that process, and ascribe them to events in human history that are important to God, is an essential part of this program. And third, in the creation account, God displays His plan of reconciliation with humankind. And there's no place where this is done more completely than it is in the fourth day. Because in the fourth day, God clearly establishes the realization that there is a great light represented by Himself, and particularly in His corporeal form as the Messiah Yahusha, that will celebrate in this fourth millennia the Moed. The Moed represent the seven annual meetings with God. They are Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, seven Sabbaths, trumpets, reconciliations, and shelters, and that we are told that the Moed would be fulfilled. We would see the sign of the great light and the fulfilling of the Moed in the fourth year, the fourth day of human existence, which would be culminate with year 4000 Yah. And indeed, that is precisely what we saw in 33 CE, which is year 4000 Yah, 4000 years exactly from the time that Adam and Chawa walked out of the Garden of Eden, to the time that these dates were fulfilled. And so it is this story that is being presented before our eyes. Now, before we get back into our review of it, and I'm going to begin by going over the timeline with you again so that you understand where we have been and where we are and where we are going in terms of God's plan. We are fortunate to have our good friend Larry back with us. Larry has, I think, been swamped with work this last month, but it's good to have Larry calling back in from Florida. How are you, Larry?
Oh, I'm doing well, Yada, and thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I've been swamped.
Okay. Well, we're going to continue here, laying down the timeline. If you at any time have something you'd like to contribute or a question, please jump right in. Well, to appreciate the timing of the fourth day of creation, it is instructive to know that the first era began, this is day one, began in 3968 BCE. That is the date of Adam and Chawa's expulsion from the Garden of Eden. Now, this is interesting not only because that's when the chronology of human history began. That doesn't say that's when man was conceived. That doesn't say that's when the universe was created 6,000 years ago. It is just the moment that Adam and Chawa, his wife, became mortal. That was the point where they severed their perfect relationship with God and severed their position as God's children. And began to die. Time from that point on mattered. The clock of our redemption began to tick. But what is also interesting here is that if we follow this path back to where it will ultimately lead, and kind of back to the future here, what we come to recognize is that year 6,000 through 7,000 Yah, which begins not on our too distant horizon, we are going to return to the very place that Adam and Chawa were forced to leave. God is going to return the entire earth back to the conditions of the Garden of Eden on Sukkah, which means to camp out with God, in year 6,000 Yah. Year 6,000 Yah, as we shall find out from this timeline that I'm about to share with you, is going to occur in the year 2033. He is going to return to reconcile his relationship with Yehudim and with Yisrael on Yom Kippurim in 2033. And then 5 days later, he is going to begin to camp out with us, because during those 5 days, he will have returned the entire earth back to the conditions experienced at the Garden of Eden, which means there will be no religion, there will be no politics, there will be no militarism, there will be no corruption. We'll be living directly with God, just as Adam and Chawa once did. So we pull back the timeline. We find that Adam and Chawa were expelled from the Garden of Eden in 3968 BCE. The second millennia of man began in 2968 BCE with the flood. The third 1,000-year human epic started in 1968 BCE with Yahweh affirming the covenant with Abraham on Mount Moriah. Now, it's interesting, by the way, and I should have just skipped over this. The flood is easy to date from two different perspectives. One is if you use the numbering system in the Septuagint relative to the ages of the individuals, what you find is that the flood took place in 2968 BCE. And the reason you have to use the Septuagint is there are six generations that are off by 100 years. And they're off by 100 years because a 100-year marker was a horizontal line amongst letters in ancient Hebrew. And in these scrolls that this information was recorded in, when you unfurled a scroll using the inks of the day, those horizontal lines particularly on papyrus, were the first to go. And so we have three issues of that. But one of the benefits of having the Septuagint is that those dates are corrected. They are maintained in it. But also we have information from the Burkle Impact Crater. Science about a decade ago found one of the largest impact craters on Earth. It is at the mouth of near the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, where at 2968 BCE, this meteor hit the Earth and caused an enormous 500-foot upwelling of water. And they have traced the evidence of this upwelling of water all the way up to the Black Sea. At the time, this is the area that God said he flooded because it was the area where there were humans with a nathalma, which is a conscience. And what's interesting, too, is in the Torah's account of the flood, the terminology that it uses for the beginning, the commencement of the flood, is an upwelling of salt water. And so we can date the flood precisely to 2968 BCE.
Yeah,
now, third, go ahead.
Doesn't the Sumerian Pentateuch also match up with the Septuagint in the timeline?
It does. And so the issue with the Septuagint Pentateuch is that you kind of wonder how old it really is, because the oldest extant copy we have is from the 5th century. But it was obviously an Aramaic copy of the of Hebrew, actually done much before that. So it is a copy of a much older text. We just don't have the older text from which it was copied.
You can only copy something if it's already been done.
Right. So both of those two sources confirm the chronology as presented in the Torah that I have shared with you, as does the Burkle crater. Now, 1968 BCE, that would be 40 Yovel from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden. 40 Yovel is an extraordinarily important concept. To explain the Yovel here briefly, every 50 years, which is 7 times 7 plus 1, this is the same concept that's memorialized annually in 7 Sabbaths, which is the promise of 7, which we call Shavua. On 7 times 7 plus 1, on Yovel years, Yovel means the Lamb is Yah. God says in his Torah, in Kara 25, which would be Leviticus 25, that these are years where all debts are forgiven, where all people, all slaves are freed, and where land returns to be communal. And the reason God is saying this is that we have a tendency to indebt one another. We have a tendency to enslave one another. We have a tendency to confiscate and to act badly in this regard. And God is saying, every 50 years, I want you to clean the slate. I want you to set everyone free. I want you to forgive every debt, because this is the time that I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to set you free. I'm going to forgive your debts. And so Yovel years are when everything that is important to God, particularly our reconciliation, occurs. And I will, when we return to Shattering Mist, we'll consider 40. To Shattering Mist. Just as a program note here, I just got a email from Craig Smith. For those who have been with us for a while, Craig Smith is probably the most brilliant voice economically in America. Craig Smith is going to be with us in the opening hour on this coming Monday. So I'm looking forward to him being with us. What we were talking about is understanding Yahweh's timeline. 3968 is the time that Adam was expelled from the Garden of Eden. You know, one of the things that most people don't know is that Sir Isaac Newton, you know, perhaps the greatest mind in modern history, the greatest mind, I think, in human history is Dode, who we call David. Spent most of his time writing books trying to establish the scriptural timeline. He wanted to know when things occurred and when things were going to occur. And that was his most comprehensive area of study. And well, I can tell you probably don't have to tell you, but that Isaac Newton's was a wee bit smarter than I am. I do have something that I have better resources than he did, in the sense that I have the Dead Sea Scrolls. He did not have them. I have access to vastly superior lexicons and can study etymological histories. We have much, much better access now. He didn't even have access to the Masoretic text. And so all he could do was study the Latin Vulgate, which was a highly corrupted translation of the, at that time, highly corrupted Septuagint. And so it would have been very difficult for him to do this. But nonetheless, he still established the time that Adam and Chawa left the Garden of Eden at very close to the dates that I'm sharing with you. He came up with 4004 BCE as opposed to 3968.
You know, speaking of corruptions, though, we might want to point out here that in what is mistakenly called a New Testament, which are really witness writings, we know that there was a corruption thrown into, I believe it was Matthew, wasn't it, where no man knows, not even the Son.
It's kind of interesting. What we're talking about here is, first, is the past, and we're going to move to the future so that we'll speak, and I guess I've already hinted at the time that Yahweh has told us precisely when he's going to return. It is true that that in the Olivet Discourse, there is a line that now reads in Greece, in Greek, that no one knows the hour, not even the sun. Now, of course, if that is true, then you can throw everything away, because if Yahusha doesn't know that which Yahweh knows, then Yahusha is not a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. But what's actually interesting is that most everything that Yahusha said in the Olivet Discourse is actually a presentation of Zechariah. Zechariah is one of the prophets that Yahweh spoke through to reveal what was going to happen in the last days, particularly spoke eloquently about his impending return, and dated his return to Yom Kippurim. And so Yahusha was actually citing from Zechariah throughout, and what he actually said based upon the Zechariah text he was citing is that the day he is returning is the one day, the essential day that has been that is known to Yahweh. That day, the essential day that is known to Yahweh, is Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliations. Moving on here, we have this realization here of Yovel. I've explained what the purpose of the Yovel is. The Yovel are presented in harmony with God's Mikre, the Moed Mikre, which is spoken of here in the fourth day of creation. That these work in harmony, that every, on the Yovel years, the Moed take on these seven invitations annually to meet with God. They take on a heightened significance because they then focus on forgiving all debts and freeing all people, which is the purpose, of course, of God's invitations to meet with him. Now, 40, the reason that 40 Yovel becomes important is that every time that God lists a time of testing, it's a multiple of 4 or of 40. You know, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Yahusha was tested 40 days and 40 nights prior to beginning his ministry. You've got the 400 years of being enslaved in Egypt. You have 40 years of wandering in the wilderness prior to being allowed
to write the Torah.
Right, in the Promised Land. The Torah was received, shared between Yahweh and Moshe over a period of 40 days. So 40 Yovel becomes extraordinarily important. 40 Yovel is 2,000 years. So we're going to look at what happened from 3968 BCE to 1968 BCE when we return. Welcome back to Shattering This. I'm your host, Yada. We have my good friend Larry calling in from Florida. We were pulling together the timeline so that you might have an appreciation for the events that are important to God over the course of human history. It begins with 3968 BCE when Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden. That's when the clock on our reconciliation began to tick. while it is not an important event relative to our reconciliation, the thousand-year increments are not, but 20 Yobel later, 1,000 years later, in 2968 is when the flood occurred, and those humans with an Anasalma, who were those humans living around the Black Sea and in Mesopotamia, were deluged. We have evidence of exactly that happening with the Burkle Impact Crater, something we will talk about in great detail when we move from the creation account into the story of what happened in the Garden of Eden and on to the flood. Then, using this 40 Yobel period, 2,000 years, we reach the first seminal event, the first extraordinarily important event from God's perspective once the human clock, the human experience began to tick. And that is 40 Yobel from 3968 BCE is 1968 BCE. And what happened on this date is that Abraham, whom God had established the covenant, Abraham had agreed to each of the five terms and conditions of the covenant, and Yahweh had promised five benefits for him doing so. And to affirm that Abraham was committed to totally and completely relying upon Yahweh, walking away from his prior life, from his country, from all things associated with Babylon, that he was willing to walk to God and to become perfected by God, and that he was willing to closely examine and consider every aspect of this covenant relationship, and also in a very real way cut off his own son, which would be a metaphor for circumcision. But those are the five requirements of the covenant. Abraham took a 3-day walk from where he was living to Mount Moriah. Moriah means to revere Yah, where he was prepared to sacrifice his son, and as the Torah says, his only son, because there was only one son that was invited to participate in the covenant. And on that day, Yahweh, speaking as the merciful Father says, told Abraham, "Do not strike your son, because I will provide the sacrifice," and the sacrifice was the Passover lamb. And so what we have in 1968 BCE is a dress rehearsal for the fulfillment of the Moed Mikra of Pesach of Passover, the first of the four that were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, in absolute harmony with God's presentation of his creation account. In exactly the same place, exactly 40 Yobel from the time that Adam and Chawa walked out of the garden, the covenant, which is the means back into a relationship with God, was affirmed on Mount Moriah. Now, 1,000 years later, which isn't the most important time again, where God is most focused on 40 Yobel periods, not 20 Yobel periods, but 20 Yobel later, the fourth era of human history commenced on 968 BCE. That would be the first day of day four of the fourth millennia of human history, 968 BCE. Larry, do you know what happened on 968 BCE? Firmly established.
I believe that the temple was built, wasn't it?
That is correct. Absolutely no question. 968 BCE. History affirms that Solomon, based upon the foundation that was laid by David Dode, built the temple, the home of Yahweh here on earth in Jerusalem. The temple of Yahweh is also Yahusha. And so 968 BCE, Yahweh's home here on earth is built on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem. That is the first day of the fourth era of human history. That era of human history would then conclude 1,000 years later, which would be 40 Yobel from the time that the covenant was affirmed with Abraham on Mount Moriah in 33 CE. And the reason you go from 968 to 33 CE, and that's exactly 1,000 years, or from 1968 to 33 CE, and that's exactly 40 Yobel, is the those who conceived the Gregorian and calendar weren't smart enough to add a year zero. So it is exactly 1,000 years, and that is when the year in 33 CE that Yosha walked into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover, as the Torah requires, and he became the Passover lamb after having Passover dinner with his disciples on the 14th day. And because the Hebrew day begins at sundown, he was able to both enjoy the Passover meal with his disciples and also be the Passover lamb on the same day from Yah's perspective. That occurred in year 33 CE, and which is 4,000 Yah. And so the fourth day, the prophecy associated with the fourth day of creation was fulfilled. Yeah, the greater light became visible as a sign of the Moed. And here, the last year of the fourth era of human history in 33 CE, year 4,000 Yah, the greater light, the Masiyah Yahusha, became visible to fulfill the Moed. And he fulfilled Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and seven Sabbaths in that year. So this is the story that God is presenting to us. It is happening exactly on the schedule that he has presented. Now,
by the way, Yada, this is all amazing the way it fits perfectly. I mean,
it is.
Odds of that happening are, you know, astronomical, but it's amazing.
They are.
It's amazing. This thing is just amazing.
When you understand his timeline, you say, all right, I get it. You've got a plan. The plan is built on the 6 plus 1 equals 7, 6 being the number of man who was created on the sixth day, 1 being the number of God who is one. Coming together is the promise that God has made to us, and it is the purpose, therefore it's the perfect result, that the universe was created, life was conceived for this express purpose of God and man coming together.
It's the timeline, it's the seven Moed Mikra, it's what they mean, both past and future, and we even see the fulfillment of the seven Moed Mikra in the future, written in Scripture now.
And the reason that Christians remain clueless and haven't got a clue on when any of this is going to happen is because, based on Paul's rubbish, they reject
the
Torah.
Well, they're reading Paul's letters, which has to do with religion and faith and the pagan goddesses, underworld goddesses of Gratia.
Correct. And so they have discounted the Torah, and the only place that you can find this information is in the Torah. And the moment you look at the creation account from the perspective of it explains creation only, as exposed to explaining future history and the plan of reconciliation that God has presented, the moment you take it away from the context of the Shabbat, of the Sabbath, which is 6 days of work plus a day of rest, and reflection.
Yeah, you've lost the whole concept right there. That's
right. The moment that you separate Shabbat from the word Shabbat, which means promise, and the moment you take that and you separate it from the God's path that he has provided for us to walk to him, which is comprised of these six steps that lead to the seventh, which is camping out with him. Once you separate,
you have confusion.
And right.
Once you have confusion, we know who the author of confusion is.
Yeah. And the seventh step just happens to be commemorate the whole concept of the Shabbat, which is to camp out with God. That's what the seventh step is. It's Sukkah. And Sukkah is to camp out with God. It is the living embodiment of everything that the Shabbat represents. So when you put all the pieces together, as God presented them, if you use your noodle and you think, but you know, God gave us on the Salma this conscience so that we could exercise good judgment, so that we could observe. He gave us eyes so that we could observe what he has written, and minds so that we can think about it, and ears so we can listen to what he had to tell us.
This would be like Shamar.
Yeah, with our conscience, with our ability to be discriminating and discerning, we can think, we can come to understand by making these obvious connections. And when you do, you then can know exactly when he's returning. Because, you see, he has enabled his plan over this course of 40 Yobel increments. If you go from 33 CE and you add 40 Yobel to 33 CE on our pagan calendars, what year do you come to?
You come to 2033.
That is correct. So if year 33 CE is year 4000 Yah, what is year 2033?
That's the end of 6000.
Yeah. That's 6000 Yah. That's the end of the sixth
day. 6 is over.
That is the end of the sixth day. And so what would you expect?
In his perspective, he's still in day 6.
Right.
He's
so,
seconds away, in his perspective, to stepping into day 7, which
right.
is the promise of the seventh day of rest, which
correct.
Is a 1,000-year millennial tabernacle or camping
yeah.
out with a family, minus
right.
any religion or any other
right.
nonsense.
So the seventh day where we all rest, the seventh day where we all rest is going to commence now in just 20 years. 20 years is going to be 2033. We are 20 years away from celebrating the 1,000-year time of celebrating the Sabbath, which will be a celebration of Sukkah, which for 1,000 years we camp out with God, just as Adam and Chawa did in the Garden of Eden. That's the plan.
Just throw one other thing in here.
Sure.
And, of course, he tells us in this last generation, you know, the different players that are going to be out there, and they're all going to be one world government. And that is exactly what we're seeing going on this generation.
What God is presenting here in this creation account is the broad strokes of human history. That is not to say that God didn't also give us all of the details so that when all of the details that he has told us are going to occur, occur when he said they would, that we would be ready for the end result. I am Yada, this is Shattering Myths. Bye. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yadis. Too bad we didn't have broadcast the conversation that Scott and I were having privately on the air. But his basic comment, if I can summarize them, is that that here is the most amazing plan. Here's a plan that is emanating out of creation. So God has put exactly the amount of energy into creation and designed this formula to so that the results would be that the history of man once expelled from the garden and then returning to the garden would play out over 6,000 years. And on the seventh year, the 7,000th year, that we would commence a 1,000-year celebration of living together back in that garden, and that he had everything fall on a Yobel year, which he described as the time when all debts are forgiven and all people are freed, and that the increments would be 40 Yobel, and that every place throughout his story, 40 is the number of a period of time of testing, and that every one of these events took place in exactly the same place. All of these seminal events are taking place on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem, and that he laid out this whole plan, and from Scott's perspective, he says, you know, I don't think God is like proud of the plan and saying, hey, look how cool my plan is and look how amazing it is, this plan. He said, this is just the plan. I think his enjoyment in all of this is when dumbos like Yada, Larry and Scott figure it out. When we spend enough time with them to say, wow,
Yada,
that's an amazing plan.
You speak for yourself. You figured it out. I just happened to read it.
Yeah. You know what? But the most amazing thing to me in figuring this out is how unbelievably obvious it was. The moment I figured it out, and you look at the pattern that he's laying out and all of the information that he's giving, rather than saying, boy, wasn't I smart, my reaction was exactly the opposite.
Aren't we stupid?
How could I have been so blind for so many?
It's obvious. In front of you. It's laying in front of you. It's the perfect puzzle. And what Scott's saying is that amazing, and you're saying, well, from the perspective of Yahweh, he's not saying, well, this is an amazing plan, this is whatever, this is just the plan.
And
it's like I told you.
Amazing. It's overwhelmingly amazing, right?
Yeah, because my first response, once I figured out this plan, and it's so incredibly obvious that he is going to return in year 6,000 Yah on Yom Kippurim, because he tells us that everywhere through his scripture, the Day of Reconciliations is when he's going to return, and that it's going to return 40 Yobel from the time that he was fulfilled the first four Mikre, that it is so obvious. My first response, of course, is, I get it, Coach. I like the plan. Put me in the game. I want to play. This is really spectacular. Your initial response is, let's go. Let's engage. And so you end up responding to God exactly the way that he wants you to, which is, I've laid out the information. If you observe it, if you think about it, if you use the conscience that I gave you, your Nesama, then you can come to understand, you come to know who I am, understand what I'm offering, and then you're in a position to respond. And that's the very first thing that you do. And then once you respond, you say, wow, we're engaged in a relationship. And you begin to learn and develop and expand the character and the nature of that relationship, which is what this is all about. Now, what's interesting here is that I've told everyone that the first four Moed, consistent with the fourth day of creation, were all fulfilled in the last year of the fourth millennia of human history. They were Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and Shavua, seven Sabbaths, the promise of seven. Now, the reason that those four were fulfilled is that we aren't functional as God's children without all four of them. Any one of the four without the others is useless. You become immortal on Passover. That's helpful. But if you're not cleansed and perfected on unleavened bread, you're immortal, separated from God. You need matzah. You need to have your soul unleavened of the fungus of corruption. And on the third day, on Bukurim, you are adopted into God's covenant family. Your soul and his spirit become one, and you become his child. But then, on seven Sabbaths, which was also fulfilled, the fourth Mikra fulfilled on the fourth day, you are enriched with his teaching, you are empowered with his spirit. And that will take us to something we will talk about on Monday, which is the fulfillment of Teruah, Yom Kippurim, and Sukkah. I am Yada. Stay with us as we return with IQ Al-Rasuli.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.